Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Mike Kehoe was inaugurated today as the next governor of Missouri. I'm watching some of the clips on Fox 2 from the studio right now. I saw some pictures that our friend Steve Butts had sent earlier as well. It was a little chilly. It was a little brisk. I went to one inauguration when I was a student at Mizzou. I covered it. Maybe it was in the aftermath. I think it was, yeah, it might have been when I was just working in Columbia. It was 1988. If I remember correctly, I could be not remembering correctly. John Ashcroft, he wouldn't dance at the, like they're doing the ball tonight.
Yeah.
Remember when Ashcroft was there, you couldn't even dance. He didn't want to dance. Dancing was banned.
Listen, if he's not that great at it, I could, oh, you mean he banned it for like everybody?
Religious, yeah, it was like a religious
thing.
Oh,
okay.
This was back in the 80s. But then, you know, I remember that inauguration because it was so damn cold.
So it's like
so
a
cold.
It's like a footloose thing is what you're telling me?
I think it was.
All right.
I don't
know.
We'll have to check with Jay, who's no longer there. You know, when we talk about free speech and censorship and Facebook, I always wonder how many people understand exactly what's at stake and what happened a few years ago. We got involved from a legal perspective here in Missouri with our Attorney General Eric Schmidt and also Andrew Bailey, who is the current AG. I read some of this piece last week by Margie Conklin in the Free Press because she really, I think, explains better than anyone how this stuff went down a few years ago. She joins us tonight on 97.1 FM Talk. Margie, how are you? Welcome to St. Louis.
I'm great. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes, we can. And I appreciate your piece. And let me kind of do this a little differently because I want your reaction. You probably heard this. This was Mark Zuckerberg talking last week, I think it was, with Joe Rogan on his podcast, kind of explaining how some of this happened with Facebook.
They pushed us super hard to take down things that were honestly were true, right? I mean, they basically pushed us and said, you know, anything that says that vaccines might have side effects, you basically need to take down. And I was just like, well, we're not going to do that.
Who is they? Who's telling you to take down things that talk about vaccine side effects?
It was people in the Biden administration. These people from the Biden administration would call up our team and like scream at them and curse.
So that's one part of the story. But then this is amazing to me. Jim Acosta on CNN says something this stupid, not really shocking for him.
Yeah, and he's complaining about the Biden administration, you know, yelling at them to say, you know, get some of this COVID misinformation off their platforms. I mean, isn't that that's sort of what the White House should be doing, right?
No, it's not. And Margie, you need to explain to the audience and maybe to Jim Acosta what really happened during all of this and how one of your stories in February of 2020 was spiked along these lines, right?
Yes. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this story, which has really resonated with our readership and beyond. Back in February 2020, it was before COVID had really spread across the country, and it was like really mostly contained in China. But everyone was saying it was probably a wet market
right.
that had kind of sparked it. And I would say we all pretty much assumed that that was correct. But then I had this a China expert reached out to me, somebody I'd worked with before. I was at the New York Post, by the way, at the time, as a Sunday editor, and I ran the opinion section for the Sunday paper, and he suggested a different theory, which was there is a Wuhan Institute of Virology in the city where it's said to have originated COVID. And China's labs are not known for their great security. In fact, leaks have happened throughout the country before that have led to disastrous effects. And he said that could also be a reason why this happened. And I was like, wow, I didn't know anything about that because it wasn't like being reported.
Right.
And I was stunned by the level of detail and his argument for how this could happen. He actually laid out how it could have transpired. And I thought, this is very convincing. And he had lived in China. He knew a lot about the country. And I just thought, this is an idea worth exploring. I didn't say it was right. Who knows? But I thought, this is an idea that the world should hear about. And I was happy to publish it in the New York Post in February 2020. And, you know, I wasn't surprised when it took off. I can watch the web traffic of every story that we publish online. And I saw that immediately our readers were sharing it and liking it. A lot of them on Facebook at the time was driving a lot of traffic to the New York Post site. And as I watched the story climb higher and higher with the audience,
yeah,
it just out of nowhere, hours into its life cycle, dropped. It was like it didn't exist anymore. And I just was stunned. I thought there was some glitch in our analytics, or I just wasn't, I don't know, I couldn't believe my eyes. I found out a couple of days later that Facebook had flagged this story as false information. It gave me a chill. I mean, first of all, I thought I'd done something wrong because as a journalist, you want to get things right and you don't want to ever be flagged as reporting anything false.
Yeah, you even said, look, I've done this, you know, I've been putting my life's work here and I've never had anything that's been flagged as false information. It's kind of horrifying, right?
It's really embarrassing. I was worried that I would cause financial repercussions for the Post because, again, at the time, Facebook drove so much traffic to all the sites, all these news sites, that you kind of depended on them to be a lifeline for our stories. And, you know, if they flag you three times, this was the policy at the time, if Facebook flags your Outlook outlet three times, they basically deplatform you. So that
is death
to a, so I thought, oh my God, I'm in huge trouble. Thankfully, I had a wonderful editor, Steve Lynch, who backed me. He was like, you know, this was an opinion piece. He was exploring an idea. It's perfectly valid. And we fought to get it, the flag removed. And thankfully, we did. But we, in doing so, we found out that one of the so-called experts who the Facebook fact checkers consulted for like whether or not this story should be flagged had a conflict of interest. She was a scientist who had an American scientist, but who had worked at the Wuhan Institute of Virology for a period of time and done tests there. And she said it was like perfectly secure, the facility. And I mean, I just, when that came out, it was like, well, right, of course she would say that. She's backing an institution that she's worked with, that she has an allegiance to. And then I started to realize, oh my God, this is actually something very different from what it seemed like. And it wasn't my fault for publishing a story that was false. It was, you know, we published something that could be true. And it made Wuhan and the people around it, the Institute of Virology, look bad. And wow, that was stunning to me. Also that American scientists could be protecting Chinese interests. I don't know. That at that moment, I really thought my whole worldview on free speech and journalism and tech, it really just changed forever the way I thought about things.
Yeah, and it should have. And that kind of brings us to where we are right now. Now, that crosses over. Your story certainly crosses over with what we heard Zuckerberg just say when I played the soundbite to Joe Rogan, because the administration starts pressuring Facebook to censor some of the stories. But I have to get reaction to this, because this is, to me, this is stunning. I played the soundbite to you. It's very short. It's Jim Acosta on CNN.
Yeah, and he's complaining about the Biden administration, you know, yelling at them to say, you know, get some of this COVID misinformation off their platforms. I mean, isn't that sort of what the White House should be doing, right?
Margie, I'm stunned. stunned that an anchor, I really am. I'm, you know, Jim Acosta is a bonehead anyway. He really is. I highlight that. But that is amazing to me that a guy that's supposed to be a journalist on CNN doesn't understand the implications of what Zuckerberg and what you are talking about, how that has no place in a country with free speech.
Well, right. And here's the thing. It turns out the story that I published was the opposite of misinformation.
It's true. Right.
It is probably very likely true. And then you start to wonder who decides what is misinformation.
Yes.
And it gets very scary. The idea that there are certain powers that be in this country, which, you know, we believe in the First Amendment and exchange of ideas and open thought and open inquiry, that one powerful side should control what is said, what is shared, what is believed, is deeply frightening to me. I'm really, really glad, though, that it's all come to light, that Zuckerberg has issued a mea culpa. I think it is politically interested with Trump coming into office. I think we're seeing a serious shift.
And, absolutely.
And that is, you know, it's a reckoning, really, for these companies that have allowed this, participated in it, willingly or not. The truth will out.
So what was your reaction? What did you think when he came out, Zuckerberg, last week and said, okay, we're stopped with the fact checkers, probably a little bit too late, but thoughts on that overall moving forward?
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty stunned at how quickly everyone's changing the party line post the election of Trump.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I did think this is self-interested. I also thought it's just probably for the better, though, that we're starting to recognize what happened during that delirious time. And then I really, really hope that in future, should we be ever exposed to, you know, terrible situation like that again, we wouldn't try and shut down free inquiry, because it was important that we discussed where COVID came from. For years, like, I'd say the legacy press was just like saying nothing to see here. It's the Wuhan wet market. Anyone who suggests otherwise is a conspiracy theorist. And it did damage, serious damage to journalism as a profession, that they clearly had, I guess, an interested narrative in the situation. They had a narrative they wanted to push. And you know what? Americans are smarter than that. They can see through it. They also are asking the same questions. They want to have answers, and they want journalists to be asking good questions when situations like this arise.
Yeah, not being shut down. Right, not being shut. Look, I don't know if you know or you're familiar with Dr. Marty McCarry, but he's been nominated as the head of the FDA. But I hooked up with Dr. McCarry very early in the pandemic because he was an alternative voice on Fox, of course. So many so-called experts probably didn't want to be associated with that. But one of the things that he always said at the beginning is, hey, I might not be right about all this stuff, but how about some alternative voices? Because it seems like we're just accepting the word of Dr. Fauci and whatever is coming out of the White House. What about some of these other theories? This kind of falls in line with some of your reporting back then as well, but that was all considered, you know, verboten.
It is. I'm still kind of reeling from it, to be honest, Mark. I can't quite get over the extent to which people were suppressed. I mean, Jay Bhattacharya being another, I think, hero, really, American hero, who has now been nominated by the Trump administration as well for a, you know, key role. And a lot of these former, like, dissidents, I guess, who are shut down are now having their moment in the sun. They're kind of saying, like, hey, I wasn't completely wrong. And it's, you know, what's really wrong is to, like, just not want to actually show curiosity about what is going on. And let's ask questions. The answers might not even all be right, but at least we can share certain theories. What could we? That's what free speech is about at heart. It's the best ideas win. And if you don't allow all the best ideas to float to the top, you have censorship.
What would you say? Because I bet that some of the CNN folks and Jim Acosta would say, well, Margie, wait a second. We were in this unprecedented territory in early 2020. We didn't know what was going on. We didn't know what we were encountering. So we had to do these things out of public safety.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what? If only the government could have said, we don't have all the answers. And in the interest of public safety, we think these are the right guidelines for now, but they might change as we learn more. It would have done a lot to protect, public trust. Because what actually happened was, these are the rules. This is the truth. You know, masks stop the spread. That was one of the first ones. Well, we found out that's not true. And every little statement that was cited as fact by the government, when it was learned quickly soon thereafter that it was not true, the public started to not believe the government.
Absolutely. And they still don't. Yeah. Look, I remember one of my deepest regrets was in June. This would have been in June of 2021. I remember. On this station, I said, this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, well, you know, people were basically throwing them to the side saying, you know, it's unvaccinated versus vaccinated. Well, we quickly learned that that wasn't the case either. And that if you were vaccinated, you can certainly give the coronavirus to somebody else. But there were so many things. And that was even into like the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th month through that year that were still being covered up, Margie.
I know, and it's really a shame, because if you look at a country like Sweden, they kind of reopened quickly, and they protected their most vulnerable people. And that was a completely different approach to COVID that most Western nations didn't take. And, you know, they were less affected. I'm not sure of all the figures, I got to be honest, but I know that their economy and their society opened up more quickly, and I think they had less disasters if that's some of their children's learning and things like that that we're still coming to terms with now.
Well, and I can't help but think about these fires and think about these kids in Los Angeles that, you know, are already behind with learning loss. If you're a kindergartner, first grader, you're already behind, and now you may not even have a school to go through, and it's even more devastating. But look, I'm glad you wrote about this. Margie Conklin, by the way, I'm a huge, huge fan and promoter of what Barry and the Free Press and what you guys have been doing over there, because there's actual journalism that's taking place, and there needs to be.
Thank you so, so much for your support and for having me on. It was a pleasure talking about my story, and I hope you have me back another time.
We'll do it. Thank you, Margie Conklin. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care. Yeah, it's a great piece, and it is so important.
Wow.
I don't understand how Jim Acosta could even say anything like what he said in not understanding the implications of what was happening at the time. And, you know, one of the stories that I've shared, too, and this is just a little story, but in that period of June of 2021, I was approached by a salesperson here in the building to say, hey, do you want to do a campaign for the vaccine? And I did. I wanted to do it enthusiastically. I thought that that was something that could help people, that we could, you know, get the vaccine out there and it would reduce the exposure risk and death. And in August, at the beginning of August, I started doing the campaign. I'm doing live commercials here. I'm being basically paid by the state of Missouri and the federal government because the money was coming from them.
Oh, wow.
And I start to realize that, you know what, this messaging that I have is not working and it's not accurate, right? So I want to do something about it. Then I approach the salesperson, and I'm not really given any indication of whether or not the copy is going to be changed or the messaging. So then I elevate it and I took it to the ad agency that was doing the campaign because I was concerned and my reputation was on the line.
Right.
So the agency kept giving me the runaround saying, oh, we're waiting on the governor's office, blah, blah, blah. Well, this whole thing turned into this often happens with me. So you've worked with me long enough to know that, where somehow I was deemed the bad guy.
Right.
I was deemed the bad guy.
You're not supposed to ask questions.
The salesperson went nuts on me. She's no longer here in the building. Just went crazy on me. What are you doing this? This is my client. I'm like, I'm telling people that the vaccine is doing this when it's not. And this is my reputation. And I think there's, you know, something that needs to be done here. And finally, you know, the messaging changed, but it was weeks and weeks when people realized that there needed to be a change in that. So there's so many things, so many books that could be written, all of those things. But hey, the bottom line here is check out the FP. Go to the Free Press because they're doing real journalism. Margie's piece is up there and a lot of other good reporting that is necessary this day and age. 524.
Get more at 971talk.com.